time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
Welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host, Don Wyatt.
Delighted, as always, to be here.
It's always good to see you, Don.
It's always good to be here.
It's good to be seen.
That's what my dad used to say. It's good to be seen.
That's what I was going to say. Well, our dads. Anyway, this is OK Safe's radio show, America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. OK Safe's websites, which are now up to three, are ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. Our second website is exposinghealthcarereform.com. And that, guess what that's about, Don?
Healthcare, I'm guessing.
It is. It's about healthcare reform and telling the truth.
It's an excellent website.
It's a source of original material and source documents. We don't post a lot there, but what's there will help you if you're trying to find out what healthcare reform is really about in your state, because
exactly,
it'll be the same as our problem in Oklahoma.
Exactly.
Our third website is stopsmartmetersinoklahoma.org. That's a different designation on the end there, but that's another effort, an ongoing effort, as in many states, to try to stop the installation and the rollout of smart meters on people's homes.
Yeah, part of that new smart grid and all of the stuff associated with it.
The mesh grid.
Yeah.
And there are more and more people who are experiencing serious negative health effects from those smart meters.
We're all being cooked.
Microwaved.
Yeah, microwaved to death.
All right. And Don, you've got some websites.
I do. I'm involved in a couple of other organizations besides OK Safe, one of which is the Tulsa 912 Project. And that website is simply Tulsa912Project.com. And a outgrowth of that was an organization that we set up called the Tulsa Taxes Task Force. And we have a website for that called boondoggleblog.com, boondoggleblog.com.
What do you focus on?
We focus on ways in which our public institutions are wasting our money.
Oh, they're not.
Doesn't happen very often, does it?
No. No, it doesn't. Well, Don, we have a special guest today, and this is a frequent guest of ours, and we just love having her on.
Yeah.
And it is, her name is Vicki Davis, independent researcher, former computer systems analyst, and just an all-around fine person. Great researcher.
Exactly.
Her website is channelingreality.com, and it has nothing to do with being a medium. It has to do with actually telling the truth about the things that are happening over the last several decades in this country to convert us from what we thought we were into something that is more administratively run, favoring technology companies, really.
Right. We've talked about high tech a lot with Vicki. She and I both share some similar backgrounds in that field, and she's a great resource.
She is. Today we're going to be talking about an issue that's on a lot of people's minds. We don't normally address federal law other than health care reform and some other issues.
FEMA, maybe.
Maybe FEMA.
Agenda 21, maybe.
Yes. Well, yes, we do. All right. So we do. We do talk about those things periodically. But since we're broadcasting from Oklahoma, we typically talk about issues that affect Oklahoma. But today we're going to be talking about the immigration reform efforts for 2013, which is basically a continuation of all the other bad policies that are coming out of Washington, D.C.
And surprisingly interwoven with them. When you start, you think of immigration as being kind of a separate subject, and as it's treated in the media, often it is treated as a separate subject. And we focus primarily on the low-skilled workers,
amnesty,
flooding across the southern border. But this bill has a lot more to do with other issues than that.
Like it, like a lot of the other ones, the health care reform,
exactly,
law, the TARP, and all of these are a result of the effort called globalization.
Exactly.
And adopting a global economy and a migratory workforce, and just basically the end of a sovereign nation and
exactly,
nation states.
Exactly.
So
and
that's
this,
about it.
Yeah, and there's a Senate bill S-744, which has passed in the Senate. And that's going to be the basis of some of our discussion today. You need to be aware of it. We want to keep this from proceeding in the House. There's a group of senators that I think betrayed their constituents in a very deleterious way, and we need to be aware of that and remind them that we don't appreciate it and hold them accountable. But those are some of the subjects that I'm eager to talk to Vicki about, because when I did my research and preparation for the show today, I learned a ton, and I know even more that I still need to learn.
We've started titling the shows, and this one's going to be called Americans Out, Guest Workers In, the 2013 Immigration Bill.
There you go.
And just briefly, Congress is once again considering immigration reform, investment in technology, for instance, those drones, Don,
yes.
Cameras and tracking technology is increased in the proposed legislation passed
That's
by
right.
the Senate. Closing the borders is not.
That's right.
Amnesty is broadened. The guest worker program is back, favoring immigrant workers over U.S. citizens. And today's guest, Vicki Davis, will be discussing her article called Immigration Debate, The Rest of the Story. Welcome, Vicki.
Hi, Amanda and Don. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're very happy to have you back again.
It's our honor.
Senate Bill 744 has the title Border Security, Economic Opportunity, and Immigration Modernization Act of 2013. And Don, you already mentioned it's authored by the Gang of Eight.
That's right.
Do you see who's the Gang of Eight?
That would be Senators Schumer, who's listed as the author, but his conspirators in crime included McCain, my former senator while I lived in Arizona, Durbin from Illinois, Graham, Menendez, Rubio, Bennett, and Flake. Flake's another one of those from Arizona that you would have expected to be a bit more conservative and protective of our constitutional rights, and the fact that he's included in that with his colleague McCain is very disturbing to a lot of Arizonans.
I can imagine.
I'll bet that Flake is in a district that has a university in it.
Probably.
Guarantee it.
Well, Vicki, you wrote that article, Immigration Debate, The Rest of the Story. Where can folks see read this, and what is the rest of the story? Let's just get into this.
Okay, it's on my website, and it's actually at the top of the list of my latest research. What the rest of the story is that the immigration issue is not really about immigration at all. It's about U.S. trade policy. And how I arrive at that is it took me a number of years to figure this out, but back in 2005, when they first tried to pass this immigration reform. I really hate to call it that because that isn't really what it is, but that's what they bill it under is immigration reform. It was in the Real ID Act of 2005, and one of the provisions in that legislation was something called the Guest Worker Program. And as I was reading through that, I realized that this was a new computer system to manage guest workers in the United States. Well, as a systems person, I can tell you can't manage guest workers unless you manage domestic workers. And as it happened to be, I'd already done some research on two new systems that were created under the Clinton administration. One called America's Job Bank, and the other one called America's Talent Bank. Well, those two things together constitute a management system for the American labor force. Well, I can't think of anything more un-American than government management of the labor force. I mean, with systems like that, we're talking about China, we're talking about the Soviet Union, we're not talking about the United States, right? But here it is, they're building this system of management. Well, as I looked into it further, and this is all tied up with outsourcing of computer systems and the import of foreign workers to, and in particular, workers from India to do systems work in the United States. There's a program called the H-1B program, and that is the mechanism by which corporations and our government were importing foreign workers to take jobs away from people like me, you know, a systems person, which is how I happened on to the whole subject. Well, as you trace it down, what you find out is that in 1995, when they passed the legislation to create the World Trade Organization, one of the provisions in it, the main provision in the Uruguay round that was negotiated and that our government signed and our Senate ratified, included the free movement of goods and services. Well, when you look at services, what is a service? A service is a job or a person. If you're looking at services in particular, you can look at IT people, doctors, lawyers, nurses, actors, actresses, clergy.
Athletes.
I mean, you just go down the list. Just about any job that you can name is a service.
Casino workers, that's a service.
Casino workers, restaurant workers, the motel maids. I mean, every single job in the whole United States is just about a service job, because we don't manufacture anything anymore, hardly. So we already exported those jobs over to China, right?
Right.
So what this guest worker program is an attempt to manage the trade flows of service workers coming into the United States. Okay. Only they put it under the cover of immigration, and you'll notice that whenever they talk about it, they always use Jose and Maria, who sneaked across the border from Mexico.
Exactly, and it has nothing to do with that, really, does it? That's, if you think about wolves in sheep's clothing, that's the sheep's clothing that they're wrapping this wolf in.
That's exactly right, and the ones that we should really be concerned about are the ones coming from India. Because it took about 20 years or so for our universities, especially the graduate programs, to really be taken over by foreigners. And so what they've done is to establish a pipeline through our institutions of higher learning to the graduate programs. And the people that leave our universities out of the graduate programs really become the intellectual leaders of the country, both business as well as science and education.
Right.
And so now we have a situation where the mainstream propaganda is that Americans can't cut it anymore. We need these foreigners in our country. There are jobs that Americans won't do. Of course, they're pandering to the blue-collar people at that,
right,
at the lower-level jobs. But for the professional jobs, supposedly Americans just can't do these jobs anymore. And if you listen to the mainstream propaganda, you'd think that the baby boomers never had any children at all. You know, we hit a population cliff, baby boomers are retiring, boom, you know, there will be no more population in the United States if we don't bring in all of these foreigners. So that's the take on the immigration issue that I have.
Let me elaborate.
that perspective.
Let me elaborate a little bit more on that subject, because you and I both come from the high-tech computer systems world and are both familiar with a lot of that industry in Silicon Valley over in California. And you and I both know how dependent most of those businesses are on H-1B people. Once upon a time, we in America were very well aware of the Soviet strategies. This is back in the 50s and 60s. Of selecting kids as early as 5 and 6 years of age for special abilities and then channeling them into things that were high profile, such as gymnastics or other athletic activities, and that's how they managed to become so dominant in the Olympics. About the 70s, and it may have been a bit later, you may know the exact date, I know that India started doing exactly that for their computer science training programs, and they set up some of the finest and largest computer science training academic institutions on the planet. And there are many of them, and they set out to create more computer science majors than the rest of the world combined. And by the year 2000 or so, I think they had actually accomplished that. And it may have been even earlier. It may have been more like 1990. And it corresponded with the rise of the economic union in Europe. And they began to dominate the supply of those technologies all over the globe. Did you see it that way, or was there a different perspective that you had?
No, actually, I did see it that way, because when I started researching outsourcing, because it was such a betrayal. Number one, it was a national security issue, because our country is so dependent on computer systems. So I couldn't figure out why the United States was allowing and, in fact, encouraging the outsourcing of computer systems to India, and why they would massively import Indians into the United States to take those jobs.
Right.
Because it's not just the training on the job that is important in an IT job. I mean, you're working with sensitive data, regardless of whether it's proprietary information for a corporation or whether it's personal information for the people of this country. There is a lot of cultural knowledge that goes into, or that should go into, an IT person.
Right, absolutely. Or a systems person more generally, yes.
Yes, like the idea of privacy, and like the knowledge of what would be an invasion of privacy and what would be against the law to do.
Right, or at least inappropriate.
Or against the law.
Right.
So basically it's the difference between right and wrong based on the Western standards of morality.
Right. Well, the inculcated standards of our society have been eroded by not having them imbued by those outsourced systems engineers. Is that the way
right.
you would see it?
Yes, that's exactly the way that I would see it. And
this is
anyway, this is
permeating everything. It's permeating education, and it's permeating defense, and it's permeating labor and small business. Yeah, by the way, here's a teaser. We're not quite to the bottom of the hour, but we will be shortly. If you think that immigration is not a threat to you because you're a small business owner instead of a blue-collar worker, we got news for you, don't we, Vicki?
Oh, we certainly do. Absolutely. Yeah, that we could make a whole show out of that.
We sure could.
As a matter of fact. But anyway, as I started researching this, there was a man named Harris Miller who was the CEO of an organization called the Information Technology Association of America. And that was a big lobbying firm in Washington, D.C. And most of the propaganda coming out of D.C., was coming from this organization. And Harris Miller was testifying to Congress how we needed all of these workers and how there was a shortage of IT workers. And, you know, here I am, you know, with 20 years of experience sitting on the bench, you know, and after having several years of looking for work, couldn't find any. and he's shouting shortage. I started looking into this guy. Well, it turns out that he came out of California, and I don't know whether or not you remember this, but I guess it was in the early 70s or early 80s when Cesar Chavez was trying to build his farm workers union.
Right. I remember it well. The great boycott.
Yeah, the great, but yeah.
That, G-R-A-P-E, that whole thing. Yeah.
Well, Harris Miller formed, and now Harris Miller is an immigration attorney. And he was in California, and he's the one that developed all of the propaganda about shortages of farm workers. And with Governor Duke Majan, they succeeded in lobbying the legislature to break down California's farm worker laws. And at that point, they had a massive immigration of Mexican farm workers from Mexico to break Cesar Chavez's farm workers union. Well, Harris Miller then was hired as the CEO of this Information Technology Association, and he did exactly the same thing to IT people.
Exactly. Yep. That's a perfect example. And what they did to make the public feel that there must be something going on with farm workers was they manipulated the price of commodities viciously in the food market for a while. Apples would disappear, lettuce would disappear, all of these kinds of things would simply disappear from the store or become very expensive. Then they turned around and did exactly the same thing in the high-tech world.
Yes, they did. And they've actually done it to nurses, too. They
That's
run
true.
Up the
Good
price
point.
Of labor just in a few places just so that they can create media stories. And even though it's not true anywhere else, it's just true at, you know, this one hospital or, you know, this one IT firm or whatever. But they use that as the media model, the dog and pony show for the media. And but anyway, this guy, Harris Miller, I did a full profile on him. It's on my website. And it turns out that he was actually working with the Indians, even though he pretended that he wasn't. He did a trip over to India, and he was pretending that this was all new to him, never saw anything like it, blah, blah, blah. Well, there was a guy over there called Dewang Mehta, and Mr. Mehta was, they call him the father of IT in India. Well, Mr. Mehta let it slip. He really admired Harris Miller, and he called him his brother, like his brother, you know, very close to him. And he let it slip that he'd been working with Harris Miller since about 1995. On the strategy for the IT invasion of the United States.
By the IT?
By all of the IT people that had been trained over there, yes.
In India, right. Okay. The Indian IT people.
And I'll tell you what, I have a quote on my website from a guy named MJ Premja. Talk for a second while I find this, because this is important.
Well, we've only got just a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour. I want to give our listeners Vicki's website again. It's
yes.
channelingreality.com, channelingreality.com. And the article that she's discussing is the immigration debate, the rest of the story. She's got a lot of good information on her website.
Yeah.
And Vicki, you have a search button there, don't you, so you can do a search?
Yeah, I just got it. Okay. Azim Premji, he's the chairman of YPRO, which is an Indian IT firm. They were holding a seminar over in India. It was called the All India Management Association. And here's what he said. Addressing management students here, Mr. Premji explained that when software services were being outsourced, It was done surreptitiously. This was done because it was the requirement of that time. The industry then stood witness to a vast number of layoffs. Well, right there, that is an admission of what really could be considered an act of economic warfare.
I would agree.
And Harris Miller was involved in that, and he aided and abetted that.
Or even caused it.
Or caused it, yes. And so a lot of us, when Harris Miller ran for the Senate against James Webb in Virginia, a lot of us got together and we just pummeled Harris Miller on websites in Virginia with this information, using this factual information about who Harris Miller is and what he did to this country.
If you wanted to put the happiest face possible on it, you'd say, well, Hewlett-Packard for years used to outsource a lot of people so that they could say that they never laid anybody off. What they'd really do is cut back their outsourcing contracts when they needed to cut back. You could almost pretend like the U.S. is now trying to outsource work to India so that they would never have to lay anybody off again. That's clearly not justified, but that might be the happiest face you could put on it.
And actually you could probably, I do think that there are a lot of distortions in government statistics and accounting fraud that we could talk about in
true
using just that strategy.
All right, that's the music indicating the end of the first half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. Our special guest today is Vicki Davis. And we're talking about immigration reform, which is really a trade policy bill,
yep,
masquerading as immigration. And we'll be right back.
They come into America. sweet land of liberty, of the icing, of the icing.
Welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host Don Wyatt.
Glad to be here. Thanks for indulging me on that selection of music.
That was a good one.
I haven't heard that in a long time. It reminds me of a more patriotic time, even though it came out when things were really a lot more tumultuous than you'd think.
That was Neil Diamond's Coming to America, and so that's the immigrant song. So the other one for the American workers is Song, Song, Blue.
There you go.
Song, Song, Blue by Neil Diamond. Okay, so that's the other half. Our guest today is Vicki Davis, and we left off talking about the importation of Indian nationals into those computer systems analyst jobs, and that is really a continuation of our trade policy, and that the healthcare, the immigration reform bill is really a trade policy bill. So, Vicki, welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much. This subject, of course, is near and dear to my heart, you know, because it really is the story that started me off on my research path, you know, trying to figure out what went wrong in our country, that the leaders of this country were betraying us and the media turned on us, you know, and being very blatantly like Tokyo Rose. And yeah. A lot of us were talking about it, researching it, and all we got on the internet was Ricardo and comparative advantage and how free trade is a good thing, even though it obviously isn't. And
I was taking notes when you were talking about this bill related to the Real ID Act. There are no accidents in federal policy. The bills are a component of each other.
Systematized.
When you were talking about the Real ID, the Real ID is predicated on a biometric being collected from every single person. If you look at Senate Bill 744, which is this immigration reform bill, biometrics are all over it, and that and biographical data is collected from every alien, as they're saying. So these people are automatically being enrolled in a biometric database. And the associated biographical data, connecting them one to another. Also, the requirement for technology systems to be interoperable and for information sharing between different agencies of the government. That is a continuation of the healthcare reform mandates. That is the requirements of everything else that we're seeing is this information sharing, the collection of data, and the information sharing infrastructure. The other thing on benefits. We were talking about different kind of benefits here, and in this particular law, it says federal means-tested benefits, and that would mean eligibility for Medicaid, CHIP, TANF, which is the food program, food stamps, and Social Security Administration or payments, is that these non-immigrant workers versus immigrant workers.
Very confusing.
Very confusing. A non-immigrant worker, as Don pointed out, would be a temporary, the guest worker.
That's what I think it means, but it depends on whether you're looking at it from a State Department's point of view or from the Homeland Security's point of view or from border enforcement point of view. They use these terms in non-consistent ways. Is that what you found, Vicki?
Oh, absolutely, and I think it's very intentional.
I agree.
So are they going to be
these programs, they're all designed, there is a purpose. There is a purpose to everything that's being done. And so, but when they talk about it, as if they have blinders on to the rest of the story, which is why I called my story the rest of the story. So, yeah, depending on which agency is talking about it, they'll refer to it one way, and then another agency, like Commerce Department, will talk about it.
That's true.
In terms of providers of service, guest workers, things right. like that. But when you talk about the immigration services, that they will call them immigrants, illegal immigrants or undocumented workers, you know, things like that.
Well, 744 actually refers to people as aliens. It does use the term alien.
I bet they have a special meaning or special definition. If we looked up their dictionary, it wouldn't mean what you and I think it means.
Well, it does have to have a legal definition.
I'm sure it does.
They're all aliens. That was the original legal definition. I don't know if you remember this or not, but back in the 60s and 70s, aliens that were here on temporary business, they would have to register every year. And I remember...
Yep.
Seeing commercials on TV, if you're an alien, you better go check in.
That's right. I remember that exactly. They would promote that and selective service registration almost in the same breath.
Can I just give our listeners a website? For though we're talking in opposition to this bill, but there's a good website that is, I say good, in that it has a lot of good information on it, and it's the National Immigration Law Center. National Immigration Law Center, NILC.org, and they've written a very extensive summary of all the provisions of this proposed immigration reform law, and broken it up into the sections Title I, Border Security, Title II, Immigrant Visas, Title III, Interior Enforcement, and gives the specific details. Now, their viewpoint is in favor of... making it easier for immigrants to come to the country, stay in the country, and become a citizen. So there's the pro position versus what we're talking about, but it is important to look at all sides of the issue and to see what the arguments are.
Right.
I didn't want to get you off track. You had finished talking about or had begun to talk about the importation of workers in the IT fields from India. And I'd like to get into this. You've done some work on that or research on that. And also, let's talk about this EB-5 visa program, which is extensively mentioned in Senate Bill 744.
Oh, is it? I hadn't read that part. But
well, yeah, tell us about your research on EB-5.
The EB-5 visa has to do with foreign direct investment. And in particular, the foreign direct investment that goes into the system that I called a Trojan Triangle. And what I had to give it a name because it had so many elements. You know, it was a fictional creation within a geographical boundary within the United States that was attached to a university, and where venture capitalists would meet up with university people. They would be paired with people from a university and in something called a small business incubator. Yep. And where small businesses theoretically are launched as if bubbles, you know, coming out of a bubble machine, kind of like an assembly line of small businesses. And
you just fertilize them and stick them in the incubator and they hatch, right?
That's right.
That's the way business works, isn't it?
Hatching the golden bubble brought to us by foreigners. It's and with foreign money and foreign students, you know, launching small businesses in the United States. And Amanda, I know you remember when we researched a company called Wave Technologies.
Oh yeah.
Which is kind of tangentially one of these bubbles.
But you know, it was started up by an American, but it's the same concept. By the way, when we're talking about Wave Technologies, they had been targeted, specifically mentioned for an earmark, two earmarks, totaling $3 million did a little investigation traveling to the addresses mentioned in their proposals for those $3 million for their Urban Warfare Analysis Center, and there was nobody there.
No. Well, as it turns out, those programs were established to help minorities. Those zones were defined to help minorities. Well, when Indians come to this country, what are they? Well, they're minorities, right?
Right. Now, so, was this tied into that 8A small business movement that popped up about that same time? You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely is. Yeah. Yes, yes. And so we have these small business incubators that start up, and the Small Business Administration helps them get the minority designation, and that minority designation then helps them get government contracts. And because they were redesigning our government at the time, who got the contracts to redo the systems of our government? All of these Indians that were imported. So what we really had was an administrative coup d'etat.
I agree. By the way, here on that 8A thing, I know that if you were a woman-owned business, you qualified as an 8A, and that always puzzled me since women comprise a larger percentage of the population in the U.S. than men do. Did you understand why they did that?
Well, that has to do with the feminists, you know.
There
they
you go.
Keep women out of the home and working,
it's,
you know,
it's,
so
it's
we don't
politics.
Have families.
It's always politics.
Can I tell you a description of a business like that, that the Christian missionary Charles Van Veek, who lives in South Africa, was
right.
talking about when the South Africa became communist, they had this same kind of setup.
That's
where
right.
you would have the minority woman, and again, the minority was the majority
right.
as far as numbers of population
right.
there, and the woman who was maybe the mother of five children and maybe had AIDS would be the titular head
exactly.
of a corporation.
Yep.
So she would be awarded the contract for the
yep.
government project or whatever it was, big project. And then she would pass it off to the man or the company that the real engineer.
Subcontract to a real business.
To yeah. the real business. Mm-hmm. Well, in the meantime, she'd take her cut.
Yep.
So she was a pass-through entity,
yep.
and that was part of this business promotion. So when I was describing what you're talking about here, Vicki, he said, that's just like we do in South Africa.
Yep.
And so it is a pass-through organization. Because you look around, some of these people who are these small business Not all of them. I mean, these are these special ones that are minority-owned, and this is not for everybody. This is some specific ones. You know that person probably can't balance a checkbook.
Oh, no.
And that's... yet they have the intelligence and the business acumen to run a corporation.
Right.
I've got about three stories on my website about just those kinds of people that were selected to be the face of the organization to
yep.
get the designation.
Yep.
But based on their credentials, they could never get the contracts that they did. One woman that I did a story on her, I can't think of her name offhand, but she supposedly was teaching Renaissance literature in Washington, D.C. She gets dressed up one day, goes to Kinko, gets business cards made, walks into a government office, and boom, she gets an IT contract. Well,
wasn't her name Diane something?
As a person who spent 20 years in the business, I'm telling you, it wouldn't happen.
That's right.
unless there were real IT people in the background.
Right.
She was just the face. She ushered the way to the contract.
Where, for our listeners, real quick, just a summary of the EB-5 is it's a fast-track way to buy citizenship for wealthy business investors from other countries. So that could be Chinese, it could be Indian, it could be any other nationality. If you've got enough money, you can buy your way in. And it covers your spouse.
Right.
You can bring in your family.
Not to get too bogged down, but I think those EB categories are what they call preference classes or preference categories. You don't exactly get an EB-5 visa, but you can qualify for a visa, some other visa, based on an EB-5 status or condition. They got EB-1s and 2s and 3s and 4s and 5s. The 4s have to do with religious organizations, and 1s have to do with people that are like Pulitzer Prize winners and stuff like that, special skills. And I think this particular category was designed to pick up a bunch of entrepreneurs at a lower dollar volume level than the preferences already in law. Preferences already in law, if you want to move here and bring your business that does $1 million worth of business and has at least 10 jobs, they got a class for you. But now they, in this new legislation, they want to drop that down to $100,000 and only three jobs. And that $100,000 can come from some really questionable sources like government entities. So you can imagine some kind of planned strategy to invade us with small businesses to compete with the small businesses that are already here. We know that a very large percentage of our jobs come from small businesses, and now we seem to be in competition with the government policy.
Well, and that's exactly right. And I do have quite a lot about the EB-5 visa on my website under something called the Trojan Triangle, the core. And it is exactly what you say. There are areas that are defined for foreign direct investment, and with this investment money, they can get this EB-5 visa, which is a special preference category. And in effect, they are buying American citizenship. And I should add that there are about 70 different kinds of visas. And
I read a list of 182, but I'm not trying to quibble.
Oh, well, then they've added some.
It's insane.
The list of 70 that I saw was on the ITAA website, you know, that Harris Miller was running.
Right.
So it could be that he only included the ones that he was interested in. But, I really think that our visa policy is a strategy for occupation of our country. It's reverse colonization is what it is.
Well said.
And it's a way to bring down our country. Now, a minute ago, we were talking about security and real ID and biometrics and things like that being security. But, you know, we really should talk about this in the context within which it was defined and is intended. There are two ways to do security. You know, you can have security at the border where you keep track of who's coming in and who's going out, and you make sure that only people that are authorized come in, and you know, then people in the country are free to move around because you've got the security externally.
Right.
System of globalization, they have decided that we can have open borders, open societies, and so security will be by the person by person. So in effect, what they are attempting to do is to, in effect, create a police state under which conditions we must live, you know, where you know, the biometrics will identify us as we're walking down the street, essentially using technology as security as opposed to physical security at the perimeters.
So you're a global citizen and your body is your ID.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they, under this globalized paradigm of an open world, which only the United States is really stupid enough to go along with this. Europe did it because they were trying to create a United States of Europe, so it made sense for them. But over here, we were not trying to create a United States of North America. At least we didn't know we were.
That's for sure.
But apparently we were. But all of these things that we're having to deal with, we look at it through the vision of America as a country and a national government and the policies within the framework of a national government. But that's not really where all this is coming from. This is all a designed system, a global strategy that is being, when they talk about it to us, they, of course, wrap it in the language that they think we'll buy off on and within our cultural paradigm. But these really are not national policies. They've eliminated the concept of citizenship for all intents and purposes. And the nation state that was America basically has been collapsed. And it's been replaced by this globalized system of governance.
I wanted to let our listeners know, if you want to look at healthcare, I was just checking on healthcare in the bill, and we did come up with global healthcare cooperation. So it's section 2317 of Senate Bill 744. 2317 says global healthcare cooperation, temporary absence of aliens providing healthcare in developing countries. And I've just given it a quick read through. But if we have an alien who is a physician and his family who are residing here, and they go to a developing country to work, they will maintain their presence here. It will be as though they're still physically present here, even though they're outside of the country doing other kinds of work. So doctors or physicians are given exception.
They accepted nurses, too, for some strange reason, didn't they?
It says to be physically present. Anyway, there's some exceptions. It could be somebody who's just giving health care.
Yeah, it could be.
It doesn't
be.
Have to be a doctor.
Somehow this doesn't quite ring fully true to me, because we know their real intent is remote health services with these robotic doctors and all of that kind of strategy work.
Oh, you're right. It says, has been lawfully admitted to the United States for permanent residence, and B, is a physician or other healthcare workers.
There you go.
So it could be anybody. Mm-hmm. So they don't lose any time here if they are out in another country, even though they've registered here.
Part of the great, big, huge, new global world.
Yes.
Well, you know why that is. It's so that Dr. Badumba can be over in Africa and you know, treat American patients via the remote systems.
Right.
And so, because, of course, physicians have to be licensed within the United States, so in order to be licensed, you must be resident. But if they've fixed it so that he can go back and live in his home country, he can work as an American doctor remotely.
Didn't some of this, we went down to a very brief war that lasted a morning in Grenada to free some students at a medical school down there, as I remember. And it occurs to me that I learned after that these were students that couldn't get into the medical schools here in the U.S., but the requirements down there were much more forgiving. And so they could go become a doctor in Grenada and then practice in the U.S. through some kind of a treaty relationship. Is that the kind of thing we're looking for in the future?
You bet. And I watched a Senate debate with Senator Jeff Sessions talking about the lowering of standards for physicians. And I actually wrote about it. I said something to the effect of, Bubba from the football team can now become a doctor.
And we'll send the military to protect him.
There's further Iraq, Baghdad. It says senior coordinator, the Secretary of State shall designate in the embassy of the United States in Baghdad, Iraq, a senior coordinator responsible for overseeing the efficiency and integrity of the processing of special immigrant visas under this section. So we're going out there to get them as well.
A lot of them are being imported to do life science research. That guy that I found that I listened to, Juan Enriquez, that talks about human life being just reducing it to basically a binary code. Yes, human life is a machine. You know,
life is code. That's what he's written. Juan Enriquez, Harvard professor, very influential. If you want to look him up, very interesting guy. Vicki, we're down to about 30 seconds here before the end of the show. Real quick, sum up what you wanted to say about immigration reform, the rest of the story.
Okay. Immigration reform is not about immigration. It is about trade policy. And people need to look into it from that direction because it's the World Trade Organization and U.S. trade policy that has to change if we're going to get our country back.
Thank you, Vicki. Thank you very much.
Website is channelingreality.com. channelingreality.com. The article we were talking about is called Immigration Debate, The Rest of the Story. Lots of good information on Vicki's website. And Vicki, thank you once again. You're our go-to person if we want to know the rest of the story.
Exactly.
As Paul Harvey used to say.
Right.
That's the music indicating the hour is over. This is the end of America in the Balance for this hour. This is Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt. We want to thank you for listening, and may God bless you.